Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel from merino base layers to technical outerwear for every hunt. First Light. Go farther, stay longer. Tell me when the machine's on, Phil.
Machine is on, Steve.
I just did a bunch of math in my head, but I screwed it up because I wasn't thinking about how Corinne and Phil aren't married.
To each other?
This room's full of married
that's
people.
That's correct. We are not.
This room's full of married people. There's 10 married people in this room. But I was just counting couples, and I counted Phil and Corinne as a couple. And then realized that 4.8 of us will end up divorced.
Who's it gonna be?
Not me. As my friend Ronnie once
said. Wow, that's a nice way to set the tone.
My friend Ronnie once said, I don't want to lose half my shit. So
you're making Danielle rub her belly. Oscar, she's rubbing her belly.
But you'll be glad to hear this. I just learned that, you know how everybody says half of all marriages end in divorce? That's because like a repeat offenders. So yeah, the repeat offenders blow the statistic because every time you get married, you have a much higher likelihood of divorce. Like if you get married your first time and you get divorced, it's like you go into it being like, oh, now I'm going to settle in for real. No. The next time, it's even better chances that you'll get divorced.
I'm not going to mention any names, but I know a few that have skewed those numbers.
But they think that they think they're like getting to the real one now. But they're not. They're stepping into hotter waters than they were in a minute ago with their last marriage. So I was, what's this, when you mean when you find out something good? Heartened? Is that a word?
Yeah, heartened? Yeah, you're heartened by something.
I was heartened to learn that only 4.8 of us, well, no, that's if you guys were married. I was heartened to learn that only 4 of us are going to wind up divorced. Huh?
Who is it?
But if someone said, I'm going to come in here, said, I'm going to come in this room and shoot for you, I'd be nervous as shit.
Yeah. That's got to differ on like demographics, though.
Oh, it's no, definitely.
Yeah. Indiana and Louisiana, lowest divorce rates. Oklahoma, of all places. And Nevada, obviously, highest divorce rates.
Obviously.
And I would imagine that boomers are leading the charge on divorces.
No, it's going down.
Because younger people are getting married.
Oh.
And not getting divorced. We're here, like Gen Z and millennials living in sin before we get married. And so we like suss out whether or not it's going to work, whereas your generation was doing less of living in sin.
We're not boomers, buddy.
What are you? Why?
Xers.
Gen X.
Oh, Xers. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I lived in a lot of sin, man. Even with my wife.
I know I'm older than you, Spencer, but come on, man. Well,
how far from being a boomer are you?
Quite a ways.
No, I'm sorry then. That's not nice.
I don't know.
What are you? Like the greatest generation?
Yes, Gen X. Gen X, man. The greatest generation.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure our parents are boomers.
I mean, the greatest generation. That was like my old man.
Guys greatest fought, movie, music.
Yeah, the guys that fought in Whiskey too.
Yeah.
Yeah, boomers are about 70-ish, I think, now.
You might be sitting there asking yourself, why are all these married people talking? And why did this, why did my thing that tells me I got a new podcast, if I'm a subscriber to the Meat Eater Podcast, why did it say like, hey, you got a podcast on a not normal day? Like right now, on Mondays, you get the show. On Wednesdays, you get the trivia show. But now, I don't know what the hell day it is. Either way, Four out of 10 marriages end in divorce. 2 out of 7 days will not have this podcast delivered. It's not Monday or Wednesday. The reason that is because we struck a special deal with T-Mobile to explain as my lovely wife, who's never been on the show before.
I feel like me not having my own microphone is going to get real awkward at some point when I'm pulling the microphone away from you. Yeah, this podcast brought to you by T-Mobile. So we're doing a special one just for them.
So that's why it's here now. And then the thing is, we're going to talk. You know what else I found out? Doing my 3 seconds of research about divorce. Guess what the highest divorce months are?
January.
February, yeah.
January
and February. Dismal month.
Why January and February?
After the holidays.
Cooped up in the house together.
Hunt season's winding down.
The cooped up.
Chickens come home to roost. So we're doing a special episode where we have a bunch of people and we're talking about how not to get divorced because of how to live an outdoor lifestyle and avoid the a travel intensive outdoor lifestyle where one or both participants in a marriage engage in activity that like causes a lot of being gone. A lot of things that feel extremely important that probably aren't that important. And just like a lot of marital strife. Relationship strife. Marriage or not. I can tell you totally straight face that it has that shit, the hunting stuff, has caused problems in my relationship since day one.
Explain that. How is hunting caused a problem in our relationship?
Just being gone and having like this thing that seems super important, you know? It's just like it just causes complications. You don't agree that it does? This is going to lead into the main thing here. My wife's speechlessness when I said that, the reason that we brought Spencer in, Spencer's going to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Because this way you can right?
Steve's words were he wanted me to guide us through the talking points because he has a lot to say. Which is good because it'll make up for Katie not having as much to say.
We have five couples to talk about. And when we talked about this, we brought up a term that no one likes and I've never used in my entire life. But there's this term that that gets bandied about. Hunting widow. Okay. And then Spencer was telling me that Shelby grew up because you grew up in ag.
Yeah.
And you grew up with what kind of widow?
A harvest widow.
Which sounds like a machine.
It does. I would say I had never heard of a hunting widow prior to this either. But a harvest widow, for those of you that don't know, it's a partner of a farmer who essentially lives their life as a widow from September to November because their partners are gone 24/7. Growing up, I would go weeks with just seeing my dad in passing, even though he was only a mile or two away from me at like any given point. He just had no schedule whatsoever. And I think that's been the biggest difference between a hunting widow and a harvest widow is at least I have some idea where and when Spencer is.
And the other difference probably is that there's sort of this like you have to feed the whole nation and like
a lot of pressure.
You know what I mean? It's like this whole like who can argue with someone like harvesting crops?
Yeah. And it's like
the most sort of foundational thing that can't be ignored.
Right. And it's so dependent on so many factors, right? So my dad farms with his brothers, but then once they're done harvesting, he goes and he helps all the other family farmers and he's driving truck or he's, they're like bringing crock pots of chili over for their friends. And just because you're done on your land doesn't mean harvest is
done. I'm glad you explained that because I think a lot of people would be like, well, how big of a farm does he own? But there's like one combine that serves,
right?
Could serve hundreds of farms.
Absolutely.
Right?
My dad, they own their combine, but everyone in like 20 miles uses their combine. So it's everyone's taking their turns. And then once that's done, it's calving. So they're very busy.
Then you're a cow widow.
Yes.
Brody and Carrie. Did you take Brody's name?
I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Only partially, though.
Just because she picks and chooses?
Yeah.
You found offense with the word. You take offense at the term hunting widow.
It just makes me cringe. I just...
Because it makes you seem helpless or what?
It does. It kind of comes with that, it just has that feeling of something that maybe I don't have a say in. It's like a sort of like, oh, I'm a helpless sort of, you know, stuck at home with the kids. You know, everybody should sympathize for me. But I don't really think that that's how I think of the whole thing. I mean, the whole hunting and outdoors thing is something we do as a family. And I don't know. We do okay. You know, when he's gone, it's not a huge inconvenience.
Nobody misses Brody's.
No. I'm not saying that very well, but.
Giannis is here with his wife, Jennifer. Jennifer, you had a take on being a hunting widow. You thought it sells guys short.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you look at the flip side of that. And when I leave for work, you know, I kind of expect him to hold the fort down. And he does. He does okay. There's no toilets getting clean, but that's all right. You know, the kids are probably fed better than when I'm there, and they're alive. So we're doing pretty good, I think, on that front.
And no one says you're a work widower.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did it to him for quite a few years, left in the summer before we had kids.
And then Kelsey, our favorite wildlife artist, is here, sans Seth.
Yeah, Danielle and I are currently being widowed.
And Chester's wife, Danielle, is here, very pregnant, and is currently widowed. Yes. And how's your Kelsey's an artist. Danielle is a photographer.
Wedding photographer.
Is that winding down or kicking ass right now?
Oh, it's kicking ass.
Really?
But I see a lot of marriages, and I see a lot of, you know, that's my job is to see, witness. Yeah.
That divorce rate's good for your business.
Do you do you go to photograph some weddings and think there's no way these people should be getting married?
I think honestly, I've noticed in a couple weddings that, yeah, not just like, oh, they shouldn't be married, but like you can kind of tell the connection. And like, especially when I'm photographing them one-on-one, it's just super, you can kind of tell the couple that just are I'm really bad with words, but
they have a
just,
symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, thank you.
Like a morel and a cottonwood.
And like, it's just like, I'm just there and I get to really document them just being themselves versus there's other people that still have chemistry, but just need more guidance with like intimacy and like how to be intimate in a photo without being intimate, you know, in a way. So
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
I have also photographed some weddings, and I think one of the biggest indicators that I've noticed, granted, I have not seen any of these people actually get a divorce, but is how much they fake it for the photos.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, you will see so many.
That's what I was trying to get at. You can kind of tell, like, the true, genuine, like, wow, these guys are meant for each other. And then also you can tell, like, ooh, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, you know.
Right.
I haven't really experienced a lot of it because a lot of my couples have just been awesome and, like, very much there and present, which is amazing. But
I have a question based on Steve's statistic. Have you ever photographed a couple and then later photographed one of the couple with a different spouse?
No, but I have photographed a wedding, and then they broke up that night. So
whoa. The night of the wedding?
Yeah. It's happened. I mean, like, it happens. Like, it was the first time.
That reminds me of a great joke. Oh, man, I want to tell you about it so bad. I'll tell you the punchline. He's so drunk, he thinks he's me.
It's not. It's not funny when you tell about jokes and you don't tell the joke.
But think about
That's
it.
That's his new thing, Katie.
It's at a wedding.
That's not new.
Hey, you know what? I give those people props for that evening. To know that, you know what, let's not drag this out for a year or two. Like, yeah, I give them props for being able to.
They went out having a party. It's kind of nice. Yeah.
Did everybody know that night that they were splitting up?
No. It was very like, what? Okay. But like, I think that there was a lot of things that were happening behind.
Yeah,
you know,
had a hunting trip you had to go on.
Hunting trip.
So you don't think it was because of the photography session that you had?
I don't think it was my job. No, no.
How
no,
did
but
Seth
I mean,
Kelsey?
I kind of called it. I just had a feeling because that there was something going on, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't anything I could do to help it. Because a lot of times brides get nervous, which is normal, and I can kind of flip them. I can kind of make them feel at ease and confident that they don't have to worry about a lot on their day, because a lot of people are more nervous about the wedding than the marriage. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, I have to host this party, versus like being more nervous about, like, wow, like this is my person forever. And like, it's true, even before Chester and I decided to get married, we talked about our different lifestyles. Work. I don't hunt, but he does. And when we first started dating, he said, like, just so you know, this is my main thing. It was fishing and hunting, because he used to be a fishing guide. So he was gone all summer. And he's like, if you can't handle this, then I can't change. And so we went through a lot of test trial runs. We broke up a couple times. And when we got married, I accepted him for who he was. And I loved him for, you know, what he does. I can't tell him what not to do. And because then he won't be the same person, you know? But then I have my things that I love to do that he doesn't like. So we kind of like balance each other out in a way. So I hope that was the answer to your question.
You're not going to like what I'm going to say next, because it'd be very bad for your business. My advice to people getting married is don't have a wedding.
Yeah, weddings can be very stressful. Yeah. I mean, I love elopements too. Like, I photographed a handful of elopements, and I love the intimacy of, like, they still want to, like, have a really good, they're there for each other, you know, not just for the party. But I mean, I see both sides on that too, you know. Obviously, for my job, I loved what I do. So I love being able to be a part of a wedding that's excited to have it be a wedding and not just be a party. You know, like, there's some, yeah.
Just getting back to the term hunting widow for a second, one of the main reasons that I have an issue with the term, or harvest widow, and this some people might argue is overly sensitive, it's like when your spouse goes away for a week and someone goes, oh, I'm a single parent this week.
Right.
You're not a single parent. Your spouse is gone. It's really different than being a single parent. Being a widow for a short period of time is nothing like being an actual widow. So I find it, I don't know, mildly offensive, even though I'm not a single parent or a widow myself. I do think there's something odd about the term.
Probably because you were raised by a single parent.
Maybe.
No, you saw firsthand, like, what that shit's all about, right? It's, like, hard.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not that it's not hard to take care of your whole family while your spouse is gone and while that support that you normally count on isn't there. But it's not the same as day in, day out, year after year after year. That's like a completely different psychic load.
Yeah,
I agree. People ask that all the time. Like, how do you do it? You know, but I always have in the back of my head, I know eventually he's coming back, because like I said, we didn't do this. Well, we were away a lot from each other before we had kids. And now it's kind of on me, where I used to leave him for the whole summer. And now he's gone in the fall, you know, and then throughout the year periodically. And, you know, I always know he's coming back at some point, and I'll get a little bit of that load off. So it's doable. You know, it's a little more doable because of that.
I'm going to be a long hunter one day is what I'm aiming for. So I'm just sort of prepping
long
everything.
Hunter.
Steve, tell Jennifer what a long hunter is.
The most famous long hunter that most people will know about would be Daniel Boone. And they would go on hunts that were a year or two.
If you can just wait for...
Now, whalers...
12 years, that would be great.
Now, whalers had it even worse.
As much as you want.
A whaling trip would be 2 years.
Right, right. Yeah, no communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably dead. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll point out that Boone, when you look at when Boone was home and when he was gone, and you look at when his children were born, one ain't his. It's rumored that it was his brother. Never came up, though. No.
Okay, well, we don't have to worry about that.
No. hold on, who don't have to worry about that?
We don't.
Oh, good.
I don't know about all the rest of you guys.
All right, Spencer, you ready to do it?
Yeah, for the rest of the show, we've got some prompts to go over. I hope that this is entertaining. Maybe it's therapeutic. Maybe we could use that, because when Corinne started trying to organize this podcast, she asked all of us men in the room, said, can I get your wives' phone numbers? And three of us responded, giving Corinne our own phone numbers, which is like... terrible.
That's not true. You misread my phone number.
I totally misread, because I already had Jennifer's in my contact list, and I saw Putellis, and I was like dyslexic, I guess, and I saw I didn't notice that it would said Jennifer as opposed to Giannis. So that was my problem. So then, but two out of you put your own phone number instead of your spouse's phone number.
Me.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Spencer, call yourself out, buddy.
like Spencer, you wanted to vet it.
No, I just wasn't thinking. I said, here is Shelby's phone number, and I wrote down my phone number.
Right. Anytime someone wants to get a hold of my wife, I always have them call me first.
Right, yes. I was curious if,
you got to go through me
first. If he made himself Shelby's secretary or what. Yeah. But it was Spencer and Brody, guys.
Oh, good job, Brody.
Really?
Yeah. All that's to say is we could probably use the help in communication. So the first thing is, on average, how much communication is there while you're on a hunt? And how does it differ, when you're in the backcountry versus car camping versus staying in a hotel? Giannis is someone who's probably going to do all three versions of those this fall. What is, a normal amount of communication? And I'll tell you, Jennifer is shaking her head behind you. I don't think she's going to agree with your answer.
I don't have a plan.
There's the reality. Yeah. There's what it is, and then there's what it ought to be.
And what you believe it is might be different than what it is.
When it's been about 4 or 5 days, and I go, we haven't talked to Giannis in a long time. and then I'm like, okay, maybe he's going to call. And then typically he does, by 4 or 5 days.
I have more reason to call now because my kids can actually communicate on the phone. When they were real young and you're just kind of listening to and you're like, okay,
and you're on a satellite phone.
I love you guys too, but now it's cool because they're like, what are you doing, what happened or whatever. You can ask them about school. But
he didn't care to talk to me and see how I was doing.
Exactly. Yeah,
I've gotten a few of those texts over the years that have been like, you want to know how I'm doing too?
I'm okay.
But I don't know. I'd say probably any one of those. It's just going to be a couple, 3 days. If I have a satellite or InReach is my only form of communication, I use it for pretty much emergency port purposes or to let someone know a change in plans or that the plan is going to continue on as it is. Not so much. It's kind of been, I noticed this last time I was in Alaska just a couple weeks ago, it was a tiny bit annoying. Again, I'm not going to name any names, but it used to be where we had an InReach amongst the crew. Now everybody's got their own little mini InReach and you're sitting around in beautiful Alaska trying to enjoy it. And you look around and everybody you're with is on their phones texting and you're kind of like, really? And because everybody's got the unlimited InReach plan and whether it might just be I love you too, or
there's an unlimited InReach plan. I'm unaware of this.
This is going to be so revealing.
But somebody might be trying to buy a house, right? And so they're going through inspections or working on documents. But yeah, it's, I don't know.
I like those things.
Yeah, Steve has pointed out before that you could curse the technology and that it's with you in the woods, or you could appreciate that it allows you to be out for 6 days instead of three because you're just more connected to everybody.
That's the thing is, I remember this doesn't have to do with trying to stay married, but Buck Bowden, a friend of ours who's a hunting guide in Alaska, he, like many people who've been in Alaska a long time, all have a very crystal clear idea of what ruined Alaska. If you go back far enough, it was aircraft. Snowmobiles ruined Alaska. Everybody's committed that it is airboats. Airboats have ruined Alaska.
And ATVs. You're going to hear about this next week where you're going.
ATVs have ruined Alaska. Buck Bowden told me that InReach devices are the things that have ruined Alaska.
I thought it was a sat phone.
Yeah, well, sorry. Because it used to be that you went and it was a 10-day trip. And you got dropped off or rode in on horseback and he had his clients and they were gone. And if they killed something on the first day or the second day or the third day, they were on a 10-day trip and people could get lost in the experience. Now, some guy gets his sheep on the third day. He wants his ass out of there right now.
Before the guts are out of it, they're making the phone call.
They're already fretting about getting an airplane in there to get them. Mm-hmm. So he said that, but I only meant to counter the point that it could be, let's look at it this way. It could be that there were things you've always wanted to do, but there was just no way you were going to go do it because you had young kids, whatever, like you couldn't be out of the game for that amount of time and feel comfortable about it. But at least knowing that like everyone's alive, everyone's healthy. If something catastrophic happened, right, you'd know. That alleviates a ton of, like, it alleviates anxiety and lets you kind of relax in a situation that might otherwise be, like, really uncomfortable.
Yeah, just having the ability to know you can, you know, get in touch if you have to is, they're worth their weight in gold, those InReach devices.
I'll say the one time I don't turn mine on is if, like, we were camping this weekend, me, Katie, the kids. I had to turn it on because I had to text my buddy Dave something.
No reason to.
Yeah, but like, there's nothing that would happen that I would care about.
Yeah. I mean, I try to be courteous and send a quick one before I go to sleep if I'm out there, you know, like, all good.
Every 5 days or so.
Yeah.
Chester doesn't have one, actually. So when he's gone, he's gone. He usually will text me from Seth's phone occasionally, like, hey, how's it going?
So what's a normal amount of communication then, Danielle, with Chester?
Like, sometimes about 3 days. Every 3 days, but I also know that on these trips, they're busy. And I think also they just did a show at our house recently, and I got to like watch how they work, and you are busy. Like, there's just so much that I don't, like, I'm not at home just like, oh, why isn't he calling me? Why isn't he texting me? Hello. But being pregnant, I think, has changed a little bit. Like, I'm more like, oh, God, I'm going to check in a couple days.
I think the Steve and I, over the years, we've been together 16 years.
Amazing.
Forever.
Was part of that living in sin?
Part of that 2 years was living in sin, man.
Good for you.
Yeah, we got engaged at 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, we didn't even know each other. It was ridiculous. But he was traveling all the time.
Rolling the dice.
Yeah, we.
No, point being, we stayed engaged for forever.
Yeah, we were engaged we got married on the 2 year anniversary of our first date, which is very cute.
That is cute. I know.
So cute. We didn't plan it like that. It just worked out that way. But so I've gone through periods of being pissed off that you haven't been in touch, and then periods of like, you know, it's fine if you're in touch every 5 days or whatever. I think even more so than how frequently, like, the expectation is of being in touch, it's more the thing that gets me is that Steve wants me to answer if he calls. He's like, if I call, I'm not going to have much service. Like, make sure to pick up the phone. It's like, well, how do you know what I'm going to be doing? Like, I could be knee-deep in a work call or with the kids or whatever.
Probably at the spa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that's part of it that I think if there's anything that causes tension, it's the expectation that I will be available when he needs me to be, but not that he needs to be available or should be in touch on any kind of regular cadence.
Kelsey, how about you? What's like a normal amount of communication with Seth?
Seth and I actually have like a complete system that works for us. Oh. And we like took a lot of time to come up with this, and it's, you know, kind of maneuvered over the years, but we do have a system, and that alleviates like all of the stress over, hey, you didn't talk to me enough. Like, we know what to expect. We set out our expectations
very early on. Yeah.
So, like,
this could be a little meat eater handbook. We're about
yeah,
to hear, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He, like, I am to hear that he is safe at the end of the day through his satellite device, and I am to update him periodically throughout the day on if I'm like going to do something. And the reason why we have the system, I think actually like our situation is kind of flipped. The anxiety of like safety and the other's well-being is actually more on his end for me, I think, because I do a lot. Like, I do everything alone. I'm operating a public business alone. I go do outdoor stuff alone without like a satellite device. So he's not checking that throughout the day, but when he turns on the satellite phone at the end of the day, if he sees that I went trail running and it's at night and I haven't told him that I'm back, he'll know to like up to reach out to a friend and have them check on me. Like, that's our system so that we know each other's safe. There's no, we do not at all talk about our days. Like when he's on a trip, there's just, we don't expect each other to have the time to do that, but that's our system so that we know to, like, if something happened on a mediator trip, I would know whether it was him telling me or not. But if something happened to me at home, nobody would know unless he caught it right away because of our system. So,
this is going to sound like a little bit fatalistic.
Sure.
But no, I'm saying like when it comes to communication, if you're gone, you're never going to, I don't think you're never going to scratch like the itch all the way. Mm-hmm. There's never going to be a way, whether it's through an inReach satellite phone, let's say you're in somewhere where you have like regular cell service and like everybody's tired, you know, people are like trying to deal with kids, you whatever. You're never going to get all of the communication out of the way. So it's kind of like, I just want to know, is everybody mostly okay? Like nothing catastrophic has happened.
Yeah,
because any amount of small talking, it's like, it doesn't amount to, it doesn't alleviate anything. Like no, you could small talk for 5 minutes and when you hang up, it feels as shitty and incomplete as if you didn't small talk at all.
Our expectation is no small talk. We don't imply that to each other that is a thing at all. We'll do that. We'll catch up on what happened when he's back. Like we actually neither of us take the time or want to take the time to do that while he's gone. That's our system.
I disagree. If Spencer is not, I'm obviously the outlier here, but if Spencer is not texting me at least once a day, I am super concerned, probably a little bit mad. Like, if you're not dead, why the hell haven't you texted me? You better let me know where you're at.
I'll confirm that. Yeah, that's true. But I think it's also with like, communications become very different between different generations too. And here's an example of what I've noticed is that if I'm with someone who has kids, they are FaceTiming like every night. Like that's what happens in place of a phone call. Shelby and I never use FaceTime. It's like FaceTime is exclusively for hunters that have children at home. And I just like don't notice that being used otherwise.
But we use Snapchat a lot. Like,
what's
you
Snapchat?
Do? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's very...
Is that like a... Like,
that
what
came
are you
out
doing?
When I was in
what
high
do you
school.
Do? Well, no. I know what Snapchat is. I'm old, but I'm not that old. But what do you do like on Snapchat?
Oh, it's no like actual communication. It's just like... he found a piece of petrified wood or saw a porcupine and I'll send him a picture of the cats sleeping on the couch or
sleeping on the couch.
It's very exciting. But I think it's just like I know he's alive. I can see that he opened the Snapchat. I know where he's at within reason. It's not like full on check-ins, but we get an idea.
That is if you have service, if you're somewhere with internet.
Yeah.
I would imagine this room has a lot of FaceTiming being done.
None.
Though. None.
No?
Zero FaceTiming.
Really?
FaceTime.
Giannis does it with our kids.
That technology is like, us boomers can't figure it out.
I guess Giannis is a little younger, right?
So Giannis, are you FaceTiming your children?
Yeah, a little bit.
When he's got to say, obviously, it's not every night, but when... they're staying at hotels. Yeah, maybe one of the nights or something like that.
Kids on FaceTime are so annoying.
Yeah, they wander around and then they'll like start doing something.
It's
and
intolerable to FaceTime with my children. They're just,
Our kids are talkers now, though. They want to talk and they'll tell him exactly what they did today and exactly what they, what happened.
They'll do that on the phone, but they like get a, if they see themselves on a screen, they need to add those dumb stickers or whatever.
Dumb. Show everything around them, like take a tour of the house.
Yeah.
Are there any rituals you couples have while your partner is gone? For example, I know that if I'm gone hunting for a few days, I'm going to get a Ring doorbell notification that DoorDash is dropping off food for Shelby.
Spencer is my cook, in my defense. So when he's gone, DoorDash is my cook.
I fully support that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Also, when I'm gone, Spencer, I get home and he's like a shriveled up little raisin that smells like chlorine because he's like lived in the hot tub for 4 days.
That's funny. That's good.
I'll also confirm that. That's true.
That's amazing.
These guys, I'll speak for Katie and say that they like to go get farm-raised. They like to eat farm-raised meats while I'm gone. Which pisses me off. They like to get chicken.
The first thing we do is we get a rotisserie chicken. Really? We get some lunch meat.
Was it ever a secret?
Yes. But, just more like eat it before Dad gets home. And then we don't need to talk about it. We have a friend, actually, here, a neighbor, that keeps ham at her house for our daughter because she'll just go over and ask for a piece of ham.
That's great.
Because she knows she can't get it at our own house, which is sad. Give the girl some ham.
I think your brother Danny said it. We're along the
he'll allow bacon.
He paraphrased it, but I think it was something along the lines of like, yeah, one thing that nature cannot produce is like a nice oven roasted chicken.
Yeah, bacon and a rotisserie chicken are like two meats he'll allow to be brought in on occasion. It doesn't happen to me as much as it happens to Katie, but if she's gone, I don't even want to say this to her in the room. Okay.
Here's we're all learning this together. Is that okay?
If she's gone, my goal is to make it seem like shit is tight. Oh. To make it be like, can't be that hard. And so I bust my ass and I clean that house. People are in bed super early. Shit is tight.
It seems as though this isn't a secret.
You think you've been sneaky about this?
It is like very obvious when they try to make it look like pristine before you get back.
The house is spotless. And truly, you come in, he's kind of like, oh, no big deal.
Yeah.
This is normal. I do this all the time.
Yep. No, man, I scream at the kids. I'm like, you got to get this place cleaned up. Everybody get in bed. Your ma's coming home. This is going to look like our program is tight.
You got to talk about the flip side of that you mentioned to me before the podcast, though.
There's no flip side of that.
When you get home.
Oh. All right, no, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to be done talking about the subject. A huge problem in my marriage is when I get home, I kind of want to piss on the old post a little bit. And I'm like, who took the tools out and left them in the yard? No one ate the green beans. Why is this like... Someone didn't water the thing. The bird feeder's empty. What do you people do?
Oh, yeah. That's just like the beginning of it. You're like, oh, and it seems like no one's helping do X, Y, and Z. And what, you know, that's the other thing. I don't care about the traveling, but it would extra appreciation when you get home for all the things that have happened in your absence.
He's kind of canceling out all of the goodwill he builds by making the house spotless. When
I gotta be
gone. Exactly.
I gotta be careful about going in that direction too.
I love this.
But then she'll be like, "You've been on vacation for a week," and I'll be like, "Oh no, I haven't."
I'm glad Seth isn't here. This is like so quickly turning into a couples counseling session.
Exactly.
Are there any rituals the rest of you have that happen while your spouse is gone? One I just learned about when we were talking about recording this was that Shelby will bank up shows that she wants to watch that I won't participate in.
Yeah, second that.
And then those get watched in October through December. And so I learned that one like just yesterday.
Yeah, but then the worst thing is sometimes I think you'll like them and he won't watch them with me because I've already seen it. Like... Fleabag, for example. I banked that one up. And then I was like, you have
Such
to watch
a good
it.
Show.
Right? It's so good. You're going to love it. And then he just like sat there and played on his phone the whole time. And then I was mad.
Mine's more like a work related. I know it's not maybe a good routine, but when Chester leaves, I feel like I could really sit down because I have to, when I shoot weddings, like I have so much editing, like it's a lot of my time. But when he's home, I like to we'll go out to dinner. That's me not working or we'll, have a slower morning together. So it's not it's me not working. So when he's gone, I'm like, oh, I get to edit and just watch my chick flicks in bed, my air conditioner and drink. Well, now I got to drink sparkling water, not my beer, but I'll say it's funny because I look at it more of a work standpoint. Like, oh, I can get so much done when he's gone. I don't know if that's
first
a good
thing I
or
do
not,
is clean and organize the house the way I want it to be.
Yep.
And then he comes home and
it lasts a second.
Dumps all my shit
on the ground.
Or how about when they don't unpack their bags from
Alaska. Like Chester's bag from a while ago was still downstairs. I'm like, well, you're going to Alaska again. Are you gonna unpack that one? Throw them under the bus.
I know. I can't believe Seth and Chester aren't here.
We could really do just we could really
have them at. Yep.
Because where are they now? They're basically
in Alaska.
Almost in the backcountry. So.
We're widowed.
Yeah, they have 2 weeks to not know what we have to say.
Yep, that's right. They have 2 weeks.
Are there
He said, just don't throw me under the bus too bad at this. When I told him I was doing this, he's like, just be careful.
Are there any rituals you guys would like to develop that you think would make these trips easier? One that I learned about myself was that I like to come home to like a very tidy house. And so now, whether it's me leaving on a trip by myself, I will clean up my areas. Like the dishes are clean, the garbage is out, my office is clean. And we go on a trip together. I'm like making you clean with me for the last hour that we're at home. And that's something I would love for us just to like become a standard thing we do when we're leaving home.
It's funny you say that because Chester and I literally just had a grown-up conversation about that this weekend because Kelsey and Seth went fishing and where was it? Beautiful.
I'd have to kill you if I told you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, they went somewhere beautiful and Chester really wanted to go and I was like totally okay with it. But I, at the same time, I'm like, there's just so much stuff around the house that I wish you could help me because you're going to be gone for 2 weeks. So we compromised and he didn't go fishing. but he actually did his part and really helped out around the house. And I feel way better about him leaving now. I feel like, hey, at least he helped out. He stayed this week. Now I feel like I have a fresh start and bye, Felicia.
You know? I think Spencer's going to leave this podcast thinking that he has it the worst. I'm worried. I am such a pig when Spencer is gone. I make what he calls nests. And it's just like empty coffee cups and blankets. And I bring all the pillows into one room. And then I'm quickly scrambling to clean it before he comes home. Because he's a bitch for chores. I don't know why he loves chores so much.
Can you teach Chester some stuff?
Yes. It's reminiscent of like when I was a junior in high school and my parents were gone for the weekend and there's like a party that just happened to happen at home. And I'm like, I know their ETA down to the minute. And that's how Shelby operates when I'm not around because she's like scrambling to clean up that day.
Spring is a great time to do something with your family. Do some spring cleaning, which I kind of started today outside, planning outdoor activities, which I'm always doing, taking a little trip to Hawaii with your kids for spring break, which I just did, which was great. You know what else you can do for your family this spring? You can shop for life insurance with Policy Genius. Make that part of your financial planning for the year. I've said it before 1,000 times, I'll say it again. When my wife and I, when we started having kids, we got serious about life insurance, and man, I felt so much better after we did. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, it may not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Danielle, how are things different this fall with you being very pregnant and Chester still needing to travel for work? I imagine there are a lot more considerations when Chester is like planning a 10-day trip to Alaska, and meanwhile, you're in your third trimester?
Yeah. I'll say it's different, but it's not, because last year was a really busy year also for the crew. I mean, they were gone a lot, so I was already like, okay, this is what I had to kind of acclimate to and, like, reference to, because I was new to him being gone so much. But I kind of, we both just had, like, a grown-up agreement about, like, you know, put your head down and work and do your job and like be supportive of each other. There's times definitely where I'm upset and like being pregnant, I'm like, ooh, maybe not travel in the third trimester just in case you can't get around. But I guess it's not a lot is different because I'm just as busy as he is. We both work really like a lot weird hours. So I don't know if that helps or not, but I don't feel like a lot has changed. I'm maybe just being more nervous. So, like now that I'm housing a human, it'd be nice to have him like want to check in more on him, you know, and me.
And is there any advice our parents in the room would have for the expecting parents when it comes to navigating this part of raising children? Like Steve, Giannis, Brody, do you have anything for Chester and Katie, Jennifer, Carrie? Do you have something for Danielle?
Yes.
Before that's very important, but I think there's still a disagreement that Steve and I have about something that I feel he did was egregious when I was pregnant with our first kid. It involves Ronnie Bame going on a hunt. He ended up coming home early because I called him and basically said, we're getting a divorce if you don't come home. I was so sick.
And we know Ronnie has impeccable advice because he said he doesn't want to get divorced because he doesn't want to lose half of his shit.
So Steve ended up coming home because, I mean, I was really sick. Steve had been working. Then this was a fun hunt that you went on and you came home, but you still feel that it was unnecessary. Like I was being unreasonable that I asked you to come home. Just curious.
For a couple reasons. I guess I feel that way for a couple reasons. There was nothing I was going to do that was going to make you feel better. The other thing is...
That is so messed up.
We were... we were just kind of dicking around, but... Like, we'd gone up through Maine and to hunt grouse in New Brunswick. Like, it's not... You don't just, like, decide to all of a sudden come home from there.
I didn't all of a sudden just decide to get pregnant either. Like, we were... And it was... I was sick when you left.
Yeah.
And I just got madder the longer you were gone and the longer you were driving. But I'm just curious.
You felt
Danielle,
more alone.
No, I think that really? Was bad. I do think now, looking back on it, that was mm-hmm. bad.
I think that, I mean, if I were you, I'd be pissed. Only because, like, also when you're pregnant, the guys don't get to experience it really, honestly. I feel bad that they don't get to experience what we experience until the baby's there because that's when I feel like maybe the men connect more to it. But, like, growing a human, I mean, I've, knock on wood, have had a really great pregnancy. But if you have a tough pregnancy and you're alone and they're gone, you feel even more alone and your hormones are all over. Like, it's just one of those things. It's hard for even guys to understand really what you're going through. So I think if Chester were to, like, dip out for fun, I'd be like, oh, you're not coming home unless it's in a body bag.
You know when you're – I don't know this personally, but when you're pregnant, you get a period where everything smells real, like bad.
You smell everything.
Like garbage smells horrible. Like, way worse than all that.
Yep.
So she was pretty pregnant one time. And me and my buddy. Check this out, though. Me and my buddy were going to do this thing where we dug up. We're in Brooklyn. And we dug a big hole. We had a backyard.
Oh, no.
And we dug a big hole in the backyard. And we're going to bury a pig in this hole in the backyard. And we started getting this fire going good. And it looked like a scene from like Baghdad. The black smoke coming out of this thing. And pretty soon, sure enough, woo, woo, woo. I mean, three ladder trucks, firemen coming through our apartment. They're like, that's a great idea, but you got to put that shit out, you know? So then we had this pig, and we'd been making this fire all day and digging this hole. And then we took this pig to my buddy's restaurant and cut it up and cooked the pig in pieces in his ovens, brought him back home, and I climbed in bed. She's like, are you honestly not going to take a shower?
That is so you stink.
And then what?
Yeah.
And he didn't.
You allowed
him. He was going to leave that part out.
Oh, man.
I still have yet to hear any parenting advice for Chester and Danielle.
We haven't had a chance to get there yet. Like, well, I can't, like, you know, as far as the pregnancy thing, I'm not going to weigh in, but like, we had our first kid end of September, so it was hunting season.
Yep. Second kid. Conley, after he was born, I think he went turkey hunting the day after I got out of the hospital.
Yeah, because, like, the first couple months, there's nothing for me to
there's
do anyway.
You
yeah.
could have done to make her feel any better.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, we had a 3.5-year-old and a 3-day-old.
No, I'm talking.
There's really nothing you could have done.
There's just not much the guy can do when they're just little. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, my lovely wife did observe after a couple months after we had our first kid, after a couple months, she was like, they're.
That's
really
true.
Isn't anything.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the night, there's just, you know, you kind of get up because you feel guilty and you sort of stand there watching, you know, them feed or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, there's, you know, just don't pretend to, like, don't pretend to be like helpful and then have it be that you're all tired tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, just like sleep. Tomorrow in the daytime, you can do the helpful stuff.
It doesn't, eventually, like, you got to step in too, right? But there's a period of time where there's, you know.
Brody, yeah. I am. You are so wrong about that's that.
You've said it.
You know, those first few couple months, there's less they can do.
They when you, can
if you
support
only
you.
Had one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
they
takes
can
a lot.
Support you and take care of you.
Especially after the 9 months you already house the human.
Yeah.
You get sleep deprived. Well, I don't know yet, but I'll let you
I
know.
Just didn't catch a lot of flack for going hunting.
I mean, good for you on that. Like, that's a win. But.
So,
yes.
Your advice to Chester is just like he doesn't need to be around the first couple months.
Yeah. Not at all.
There's perfect. Not a lot they can do for the baby, obviously, but you can, yeah. Clearly clean and do other things that you're not doing because you're taking your time taking mm-hmm. care of a baby.
If so, like if it's an either or, and I don't think mm-hmm. it is, we're talking about something that plays out over the course of many years. It's not like
it does.
It's not like he's like, oh, I'm gonna go turkey hunting now because then in 6 years I'll be more present. But since it's not an either or, but I would say that like our kids now are entering an age where I feel like
yeah
that shit becomes really important.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like having exposure to these different figures in the household and like putting all that together.
Yeah,
but it's hard to like present it as a borrow like a give and take arrangement between the present and the future.
Right,
you know, if you hunt a lot now, it's not like you're going to not want to go hunting later. You're going to want to go hunting even worse later.
Exactly, but eventually you'll take them both with you. We're only like 4 years from that, right? And then I get a whole weekend alone. Maybe that's what I'm banking.
That honestly is the only time. That's like the only time in my life that I feel absolutely like perfection would be that to be gone out messing around outside with all my kids. Because then I like mm-hmm. I'm doing what I want to do, and I don't have any guilt about not being a good dad.
Also, right? You're showing your kids. Like, I think that's so important. A lot of kids now are like always just. I mean. On their phones or on their cell phones or on Twitter, Instagram, you bring your kids out. I even told Chester, I'm like, we need to be like that. Like, that's like, being a kid, be out in nature and, you know, get off the grid just to be a kid and not worry about social media and like what other kids are doing, especially as they get older, you know, especially in school, like little girls, especially seeing other girls, although well, they're doing that. So I got to do that. So if they're out in the woods, just not even acclimated to that. Like I think that's amazing.
Yanni, Jennifer, parents of two, do you have any advice for Danielle and Chester?
You want to go first?
I guess probably one of the hardest things, I think, for the longer trips was because I stopped doing field work once we had kids because I used to do a lot of field work and was gone for full summers at a time. And then, you know, once that flipped, yeah, I was definitely unhappy for the first couple of summers realizing that relationship had changed and that, you know, he was the only one getting to do the field work and a lot more of it. But I think the hardest thing is definitely the front end and the back end of the trips, like the 2 days after he leaves, just because we do things differently. You know, I parent a little differently. I keep the house a little differently. I put him to bed differently, those kind of things. And then Papa shows up. What's up? You know, he's
it's
in the house. He's
going to
have some fun and game. You know, I'm just going to read you a book and I'll get
ice cream.
Some dinner.
Ice cream!
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so that's challenging. And I realized today that he had no idea that was a thing. Because, yeah, you said that to me earlier, that really there's a problem there? And I was like, oh, yeah. Do you guys see that?
Oh,
it's
totally.
Okay.
Yeah, you get your routines and your, like, patterns with the kids. And then all of a sudden it just gets – it's not a bad thing. It's just a different way of
– It's different, yeah.
Doing
yeah.
things. And but it's frustrating sometimes, for sure.
I feel like the kids definitely act up.
Yeah.
On the front end. And then, you know, Giannis will show up and he'd be like, what is going on with the kids? Why are they acting like this? And I'm like, it's because I'm a – bad parent. That's why.
Right.
That is the reason. So yeah, that's one of our challenges. I think that Yanni
so what
didn't know
what
about
was the advice.
That I mean that just to be aware
prepared.
Of it. Yeah, that it's a thing. And you know it's not insurmountable. You know you can get by it, but just know that it's tough on the kids.
Yep, for
sure.
Teens, for
but
sure.
I mean, you know, like he was saying today, there are plenty of fields. It's not hunting necessarily. You know. I'm an ecologist, and when I leave for, you know, a training for a week, it's tough the day before. And they're like, Mommy is leaving, you know, and, you know, it's a little different kind of thing.
Do you think that's harder on them or harder on you guys? Like,
I think it's harder on me, I would say, than the kids. I think they're
pretty adjusted to it. Like
after the first day, maybe they're sad, then they're out doing their thing.
Yeah.
But you're like still doing your routine yeah. alone.
And now they're at an age where they value it. Like they know like dad's out doing cool things and yeah. like they want to be there too. So mm-hmm. there's as they get older, it's easier to mm-hmm. me anyway.
It's good to know. For sure.
Steve's about to go on a trip tomorrow and I am really looking forward to the lack of kitchen grease all over the kitchen.
Yes.
Like literally, like he was like, oh, I know you're sick of me and my kitchen greases. He was walking around the kitchen yesterday, but there really is something nice about when you go and you're doing something you love and the house yep. is in order in the way that I want it to be. But I think, Jennifer, your point about being aware of that and being aware about the return mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. Like we made a sort of a policy a long time ago that we're not going to make a huge deal. It's not going to be a big traumatic event every time Steve leaves. But then there can't be this big whoop-de-doo party every time he comes home. It's mm-hmm. like it has to be normalized in some kind of way.
When we first had kids, if I was going out of town, I would sit in the bathtub with them and cry. And she's like, yeah, pull it together. Like, you're going to, you know, you so can't cute. Be doing this kind of stuff. And yeah. she said, you got to be like out kind of like smooth and come back in smooth. It's not like cakes and signs that say welcome home and shit. You know, it's like you got to figure out how to get in and get out.
Oh, yeah.
With no one noticing.
I am a little jealous when I walk out those security doors, you know, and there's a couple other kids standing around with a little poster board. I'm like, yeah. one of these times.
But no, but now they get up in the morning and they'll come down, you know, or come upstairs for breakfast and they'll go, where's Papa? And I'm like, oh, he's on a 10-day trip. Oh, okay. You know? So they're 8 and 11 now, so it's much easier. Wow. But yeah, you still see, you know, some funny. Subtle changes. But when they were younger, it was much more difficult. But sorry, babe.
For like less drama is better.
I'm just going to slip it in, but just in general, marriage, parenting, all-around advice would be, and it's hard to see into the future, but there just are topics that everyone knows, if you're thinking at all about, that you're going to have to discuss. And very early on, like when you're just at the wedding, everybody's just all in love and it's gravitas and it's going to last forever, but you just haven't even thought to discuss, like, what are we going to say to them when religion comes up? Or is it going to be public or private schools? Or there's just things that you could like very easily discuss ahead of time and don't have to come to a conclusion, but just start the conversation so that later you're like already kind yeah. of like you've been formulating a plan and maybe even coming together or yeah. you've decided that no, we're just going to, you know, parent differently on this one thing or whatever. But just like it's so much easier to think about it ahead of time than to like, when all of a sudden it's like the heat of the moment, mm-hmm. you're like, how on earth mm-hmm. did we not think that, trying to come up with a good example of something in the moment.
Oh, yeah, like being shocked. I haven't had that problem, like, but I see it with people. Like they're shocked at something they find out.
Yeah. Well, we actually. About
a pretty predictable thing that would come up. Do you know what I mean? Like you're saying, like private school or something, you know, so how did like sort of like the rough outline of that not come up in all the years prior?
Yeah, and that was so important to you, you know.
We actually did marriage counseling before our wedding, which I was like, well, because it was required to like get, because we got married through the church. Yeah. Obviously it was required, but I was actually really excited about it. It was during COVID, so like we had to do it in our house and like we had to sit in the house all day for 2 days, like together and like talk through hard things that you would never want to talk about in general. Like when you go out to a date night, you don't want to bring up the hard stuff. And because you don't see each other all the time, you want to have a good conversation. But it kind of like taught us how to have these discussions. And it did flat out ask about kids, religion, parenting. And like, I feel like there's definitely going to be things that we disagree on, which is that's obviously normal and it's going to be challenging, but hearing each other out on like how you're going to move forward and how you both can like, you know, compromise and like, okay, I can do this if we can, you know, I don't know. I think that I'm glad that we did do that because we've talked about a lot of hard stuff. There's still stuff I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I'm already nervous to like breastfeed and do all this stuff, but like schooling, I'm like, oh my God, what about school? Like obviously you take it day at a time but I'm glad. I do suggest anyone out listening, do marriage counseling before you get married.
Steve and I did that We did the, we got the pre-Canaan questions from a Catholic friend, and we went through those. Do you remember that? Obviously very impactful experience for you. But
no, I honestly don't. It was like a questionnaire?
Yeah. It had like, it was like 36 questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
Something. It was a lot of questions.
And a lot of deep questions, not just like, how do you like your meal cooked? It's
be like, would you pull wet pine squirrel legs that your kids shot and throw them in hot oil and
that's
splatter that shit
that's
from one end of the...
No, I would only eat a rotisserie chicken.
All right, Spencer, go ahead.
Here's a good example. It's like how stern your parenting style might be. Are you going to spank or take your belt off and whoop your kid if he does X thing or not? You know, that's a one that...
No, it is. So and we went into
don't
it, we went into it spankers.
About, and then all of a sudden there's a spanking and someone
we're gonna
is
do
like,
the
holy
belt
shit.
System.
But we went into it spankers and then agreed at about the same time that we're out of...
Same here.
We're out of the spanking
we
age.
We got out
and
of
so
that
so it's
business.
Like we would have never predicted... Right? That's why there's a little bit of sort of like finding a reasonable person. Like earlier I was just saying like how could you not talk about the main stuff? But isn't it weird that we would have both thought in principle... That like spanking was the way to go, and then around when they're two, being like the return on investment in spanking, it's like diminishing returns. Like, are you really going to keep? Like, are you really willing to get in an arms race with how hard you're going to smack your kid's butt once they start to like you spank them? They kind of look at you like, the hell was that?
The last time I spanked one of our kids is when they turned around and laughed at me. And I was like, okay, well, clearly that's not hard enough. I don't want to figure out what the right heart is. Like that.
Just picturing you spanking your kids right now does make me want to laugh.
I don't know
so
what
sweet.
You mean by that, Danielle. Because
you're so sweet. I couldn't imagine it.
They're way too old. They wouldn't even know what to make of that shit anymore, but yeah.
All right, you've now made our listeners perfect parents, but let's go back to like when there's traveling happening around haunting. What are the specific anxieties you have when your spouse is gone? Like, is there a certain hunt or a certain situation that stresses you out more than others? I know what Shelby's answer is going to be to this.
Yeah, as you might have predicted, it being very on brand for Spencer to be incredibly cautious. He is so risk averse. He'll like... pull me away from edges on hikes. And he's ridiculously careful. Yet he still managed to fall out of a tree stand and cut open his side. And then when he calls me about it, he's like, oh, I'm going to drive to a hospital in our insurance network. I'm like, are you stupid? Yeah, no way. You are driving to the small town ER that's 10 miles away, and I won't hear anything about it. And then he agrees a little too quickly, and I'm like, oh, it's bad. So, you know, even with Spencer being safe, it's dangerous. Like, you guys are in a very compromised situation.
Yeah, and I've recognized that when I'm now going on a hunt where it's, like, involves getting up in a tree, I get more be carefuls and are you okay than any other time that I'm out. So what about for the rest of you? What are... like the most anxious trips.
I mean,
that
I
the
think
other
we had
taken.
A conversation a long time ago about like being in the backcountry and it's dangerous. And then we came to the conclusion that it's more dangerous to get in your car in your driveway.
Yeah.
Like, this is not something. I mean, I'm not like, I don't know what you think about that anymore, but.
Yeah, I think it evolves over time. I mean, we've been together a while now. So
how long, Carrie?
I think 20 years, probably.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 21, but who's counting? Together, we've been married. We lived in sin for a while.
Oh, how long?
About 6 years, I think. Five,
I actually
six
think
years.
That's the best relationship advice is to live in sin for a while.
Yeah.
Before you
live in sin, evolve.
Make it
and,
legal.
Yeah. I think anytime you're out alone, you're always like, and now that we can communicate via InReach, or even if you're out of service, that changes that a little bit. But Brody's also very safety conscious, so that gives me a lot of. I don't get as anxious as I probably once did, but.
I'll say for me, like thinking about it on my own end, is single engine aircraft still it's still in the back of my head. Looking the other way. I don't want to get into too much details here because I want to like pick a fresh scab. One time I'm out of town.
For who?
No, you're gonna take this the wrong way. One time I'm out of town recently, and I get back, and Katie's telling me about meeting some guy in a restaurant. And I'm like, how in the world did you meet a guy in a restaurant? She's like, he just came up and started talking to me. And she's like, telling me about some other unrelated thing, but I'm like focused on, what do you mean he came up and talked to you? Do you know what I mean? And not that I'm like worried about what, I'm just like, what is in his mind? That shit bugs me. That stuff bugs me.
Okay, that is really off topic. And ridiculous, and we'll definitely pick that up later. But
that scab's going to be scab.
That's right. But I honestly don't like to know where Steve is or what he's doing. Like, most of the time people say, like, what's he doing? I'm like, I don't know. The calendar says, like, moose. You know, or whatever. but I don't like to know, because for long enough, I worried a lot. And especially without hearing from him on any kind of regular basis, I just didn't, like, I don't want to live like that. And so knowing now there is a newfound passion, or relatively newfound passion, for spearfishing, which is, he's learning and is dangerous.
Free diving,
fine. I don't want to know. Like, I would rather just be like, you go, you have fun, you make your best decisions. I've told him that I want him to think about, like, I want in his mind, if he has a moment, like, underwater or whatever, like, I can do this thing and that seems risky, but I think I can do it, or, oh, I should probably take the safe path, that I want him to know that if he dies, I am going to take his life insurance money and all of his hard-earned savings, and I am going to marry a guy that he would despise.
And I am
going
to
spend that money doing things that he would hate with this man and our children.
Does that give you pause?
I told her, when she was laying this on me the other day, I told her, I just figured you'd marry my buddy Pooter.
Paint a picture for us, Katie, on who this new husband would be like. What would be his hobbies?
Big sports fan. We go to lots of sports games. We would ski probably on weekends.
Golf.
We would definitely golf.
Live on a golf course, maybe.
We would probably move to a golf course. We would go and stay at resorts.
Would you start decorating your home with those signs that say, like,
the kitchen.
Like, home is where the heart is.
Yeah, cook people good food, make people laugh.
You know what? I respect people's design choices. If that's what they want to do, that is fine. But I would take all of Steve's skulls, and we would get rid of all of them. All of the hides would be gone, and the kids wouldn't hunt and fish
anymore.
Is
this sinking in, Steve?
Oh, yeah. There'll be some fish 70 feet down, and I'm like, hey, that fish can, I'm just going to let him be.
Oh my gosh.
I don't need to go down there looking for that fish.
It sounds like we would get along well with this Steve 2.0 that you've curated.
I might have met him at a restaurant the other day.
Jennifer, is there an outing for you that bothers you more than others when Yanni is gone?
You know, I have to be honest. We lived in Colorado for years and years, and I did a bunch of field work in the Sierra, and the Grizz thing definitely gives me pause, because we never lived in grizzly country until moving up here to Montana. And it seems that even though Montana is a very large state, when Giannis likes to go archery hunting, he picks the most grizzly infested watershed in the entire state. And it's like, that's where I'm going to go. Like, really? That one? Right beside the Okay, that's fine. Great.
Really spot burning there. We might have to bleep some of that out, Phil.
So, yeah, those are the ones that give me a little pause. And he's had a couple of interactions with Grizz. So
that one makes me really nervous, too.
Yeah.
Kelsey, for you, is it boats? Is it planes? Is it the backcountry? What does Seth do that makes you nervous?
I don't know if it's a bad thing that I'm pretty calm about all that. It doesn't bother me. I trust him. And I also understand that it's a high risk lifestyle, and it's, you know, accidents are prone to happen, but, you know, I trust his capabilities and I don't worry about it too much. The only thing that does freak me out, and this has nothing to do with him, and I don't even really know, like, how safe this is or not. It's just me projecting. Ice freaks me out. Ice fishing. I don't.
Totally reasonable.
Yeah.
Now, it's obvious how, like, a family is impacted when a significant other has gone hunting, but what about the reentry into the home we heard Katie, you talk about how like Steve is not getting the welcome home that a soldier would after being in Iraq for a year.
It's funny you mention that because my dad said, "You're lucky I'm not in the army." She's like, what are you even talking about?
What is the thing that you think your spouse does well when it comes to these trips happening? Like, where is an area that you think they are excelling that you like feel very good about what they're doing before a trip happens, after a trip happens, during a trip? Danielle, you have anything that Chester's like really nailed?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like when he first started working from Eater, I think he was didn't know what to expect, and so he was really nervous, obviously. And from what I've seen him, like where he's at now after working here for I think 2 years now, I feel like has become way more organized in a way. I think he's nailed that because for his job particular, you have to be organized. You have to be able to manage a lot of different things going on. And that was not his, when I first met him, oh, I was like, wow, this is going to be good for you. You're going to learn so much. And I will say, honestly, I'm very proud of like how he manages what he manages. And like when he gets stressed, how he manages his stress. And obviously I'm just like super rooting for him just to keep going and working hard and just learning different techniques to even perfect even more. Like, and one thing about him is like, you know, sometimes he, if he doesn't know how to do something or he feels stuck, he wants to figure out himself versus just asking for help, which I'm opposite. I'm like, okay, I need some help, you know? So I love that he's like learning to, just, you know, keep getting better and like learning different skills.
Kelsey, what is Seth doing well when it comes to leaving for trips like this?
Well, one thing that as I'm sitting here thinking about this episode, I think is important to note is we are talking about this from a work perspective. Most people listening to this are thinking about hunting as like the extracurricular. It's not like they're 9 to 5. But with that being said, what Seth does well, and this has been key for us, and this is he like systems are very important to us in our relationship, and that's something that he fostered in the beginning. So like we have very clear expectations, very clear systems. We know what we're getting into as far as communications. Like we are very good with the front end stuff, like Yanni, you were talking about all that stuff ahead of time. That's something that is very important to him, that he's brought into our relationship.
Carrie, what does Brody get right when it comes to leaving for hunting?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the same stuff. Leaving a hunt plan. I know exactly where he is. I get the onyx point.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that commonplace for everyone here?
No.
Like, yeah.
That's a good market for onyx, man. Market that to spouses.
To the what?
Yeah, they got onyx hunt. They should have onyx marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. All time.
Onyx off-road, onyx marriage.
Well, you can track them. There's a tracker on your phone.
No, that's just not something.
Yeah, let's
go. That, I mean, if she goes to a restaurant. She goes to a restaurant. I want to know about what's going on. I want to know about guys.
Yeah, we use Onyx. I'll drop some waypoints for Jennifer Trailhead.
For me, it's more so that if Shelby didn't know where I was hunting, she would know who to ask, who would know where I was hunting. So she would like contact my buddy Dylan, who would know like the exact tree I'm in, or the exact drainage I'm in, or where I'm camping. But usually, you just know that I'm in like a state somewhere.
Yeah, we should probably let Dylan in on that part of he's like part of our system here and he should probably know that. But yeah, I like to know in general, but I would also be a nervous wreck if I knew specifics.
Jennifer had to leave, but she wanted to chime in that she'd like it if like all the dinners were pre-cooked before I left.
But what would she compliment you on? What do you think from her perspective?
We haven't got to that part ahead.
She wasn't interested in that question.
Oh boy, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer that for you, Spencer. What would she compliment
me? What do you think you do well?
Too modest.
What do you think you do well
in getting ready for leaving on a trip,
or when you come back? Like, what do you do well? And
You know, I think you feel as though, like Brody said, it's not like you've been on vacation for a week. You come back, you're tired, but yeah, there's no like going and being like, I'm gonna sleep in tomorrow morning. You got to just get up at 6 and start making breakfast and get the kids up and just, you know, roll right back into the zone, which I feel like I do that. You know, I don't I'm not going to be like lazy around the house for a day.
Katie, do you have any compliments for Steve on what he gets right?
He gets the first like 5 hours home really well. Like you nail it. It's like you're so excited to see everybody and you missed everybody and hugs for everybody. And then you start, you know, as in your words earlier, pissing on the posts all over. Takes about, usually you get home at night. So it's like you go to bed and then you wake up and then you start tinkering around. But those when you first get home, you are delightful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I get up and go out in the garden. I'm like, sons of bitches.
Nobody's done any weeding.
What about where could your spouse improve on like making these trips easier?
And I don't get to say
oh,
what.
Sure, go ahead.
What you do well?
Please.
No, I want to say what my wife does.
Okay,
well.
Yeah.
So, you know, like we're always mad at each other about something.
What's it right now?
I just like stupid shit.
The guy at the restaurant.
But no, I was mad about that a long time ago. But here's the thing that I think is important. The main thing is like there's no one in the world that I trust more than my wife. Like if something really bad happened, that's absolutely who I'd call. There's no one I'd rather have like my kids or like an eye toward what they needed or like she would take a bullet for them. If I had an enemy, she'd want to cut their fucking hands off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's like that's... Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the main thing. And all the stupid fights and shit, I mean, they just come and go. But, like, the main thing is, like, do you, like, who's the main person you would trust to, like, have your family, you know what I mean? Like, who's at the wheel?
Yeah.
I've heard Steve talk about this.
And if I ever felt like that, like, if I ever doubted that aspect of, like, do I trust the driver? Right, it would make all that other stuff very different.
Yeah,
but it's always there, right?
I've heard him talk about this before. There was one time we were out having a nice dinner, and everyone was having a nice evening until Steve started asking people what the best part of their marriage was, and then someone asked Steve, "Do you remember what your answer was?"
No, I don't remember this. Was this the night I got in a fight with Cal?
Yes, and it was the night that Cal got in a fight with Brody. There's many uncomfortable people there.
The drama.
Jeez, where was I?
Anyway.
It was when Campfire Stories.
It was the audio.
It was the celebration dinner for Campfire Stories. And there was like a couple fights.
Oh,
one of the main fights that Brody and Cal got in over was the elk management plan. But it got really heated and personal. And people started kind of looking around like, Jesus, really?
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
Steve was asking everyone
passion
what like the best part of their marriage was, and Steve's answer was that not only are Katie and Steve on the same page, but they're on like the same word on the same page when it comes to parenting and just all the things around that. And so that was exactly what you just explained again. Mm. You feel the same way about that, Katie?
I do. Yeah, I think. I mean, not to just, we are getting very personal, but not to get super personal about our relationship, but I think our fights stem from where we perceive weakness in one another, which is, you know.
Oh, everybody does.
Not, yeah. Not don't, for that's sure. 100%.
Don't get married to her ass and then get a little sick. Like, get married to her and then catch COVID? Holy shit, dude. It's like you had an affair.
But the flip side of that is that, like, I trust him. He's strong. He's capable. He's loyal. Like, things that I know he feels about me. And we have very high expectations of each other, sometimes punishingly high expectations of each other. And most of the time, that is to a good end. Sometimes it's punishing.
Now I want to hear about where we can improve as the person leaving home to go hunting. And I want us to predict first, like, what our spouse is going to say that we could be better about. I think that Shelby would say I could improve on getting her a more firm schedule. Oftentimes, it'll be like, I'm going in mid-October to Wyoming to antelope hunt. And I'll be like, I will be gone sometime between the 10th and the 15th and get home sometime between the 20th and the 25th. I recognize that's a very hard thing to plan for when you're the other person in the equation, not knowing like what this 5-day window is in a 15-day stretch. So I think that's something that if you could make a request would be that I get better about my scheduling and giving you more firm dates.
Yes. I don't think that's realistic, like, at all. So many of your hunts depend on the hunt prior, right? Like, whether or not you're even going to go to Wyoming depends on if you get your archery buck in South Dakota or whatever. I guess if I had to pick one thing I wish you were better at, I wish I just got to do more fun things with you in the fall, right? Like, we do fun things all the time. We'll go camping whenever we want. We're very not tied down to anything, so we get to be a little spontaneous, and I don't get to do the cutesy, like, fall things, right? I don't get to go apple picking, right? We've never carved a jack-o'-lantern. I want to do that stuff.
I'm not happy about it either. I know I would love a Halloween costume contest.
You do strike me as like a pumpkin spice latte guy. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I would hardcore be into it if it wasn't in November. So that's just the reality of it, though. Danielle, what could Chester do better when he listens to this episode? What's he going to learn that he could improve on?
This is a tough one.
He's that good? His sister? Well, or there's a lot of things that he could improve on.
No, I mean, like, I think, well, he doesn't hunt as much as he'd like to. It's mainly, everything I've talked about is work, because that is, like, it's on a hunt. A lot of you guys, all of your trips are hunts, so that is what I consider his hunt schedule. And when he's home, he doesn't really hunt. At least he hasn't in a while. Like,
he fishes all the damn time.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I like to refer. He fishes all the time. It's fish. For all you guys, you're hunting, it's fishing for Chester. So he fishes all the time. So I guess, to be honest, now that just all like clicked. I would say a schedule is great because he's always like, he always comes up to me and he's like real nice. He's like, do we have any plans this weekend? I don't think we did because I was going to go fishing. But if you don't want me to go, I'll stay. Like, I wish I just knew more of, like, I know there's spontaneous trips and you can't control it. But it is nice when, like, especially for my schedule, because I'm so busy as well. It'd just be nice to know, like, hey, I'm going to be gone for 5 days this day fishing at somewhere. At least I knew, like, okay, sweet, you'll be gone. Let's try to do something before you leave.
You know? You and Kelsey should share a calendar. Yeah. So then instead of like getting 80% of the picture from your husband's, you'd get 100% of the picture.
No, we do that.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're always fished together. Half the time they're fishing together anyway, so you'd have a lot more visibility.
Always.
Yeah. Yep. Now we do that.
Kelsey, what could Seth do better?
Well, I've been talking about like our systems and our plans and everything. That actually has worked out to the point where I don't have a lot of gripes. The only thing that's been like a problem, and this only applies to meat eater work trips, honestly, like I love to hunt too. So when Seth is hunting personally, I'm there. So this is like not a personal hunt problem, but when he's going on a work trip, it's a lot of times the turnaround between these things is like one day. So it just naturally happens. And it's a lot of times not, this is out of his control that there's like a tornado of shit left around the house just because he's like in and out, that only one person is left to like handle. So that's the only thing that gets to me sometimes, but we talk about it and it's gotten a lot better.
Carrie, tell Brody how he could improve.
Well, the stuff lying around the house when they get home, where, like the dump, that's the dump. A big one. But he knows that. But, you know, I thought of one other thing that Brody does
really
well. Brody
just dump it out in the yard.
I do sometimes when it's nice. But then that's still got to be cleaned
like
up
under
by
the
someone.
Awning or something. I don't know. Yep. Why you got to dump it in the house?
But you know what Brody does?
Thanks for the
We're all learning together.
One thing he does do well is he puts equal energy into planning outings and doing things for our family and getting those trips together, and that means everything.
You're supposed to be like, talking about something bad.
I know, but I missed that part earlier. But it is, and it's really, like, when we're doing trips, which we do all summer long, we do all fall, he really puts, like, he puts the whole thing together. He gets the food together. He does a lot of that work, and that's a important to our whole family. It really is. We base a lot of our fun and good times and memories around that.
Yanni, we're going to need you to role play here. What would your wife say that you could improve on when you're going on a hunting trip?
Just have the whole house spick and span and have seven meals pre-prepared prepared with little instructions. You
that
know,
would be so,
so
nice.
Is that a that real request? Amazing. Like, is that something that you could yeah. pull off and that she would use?
Dude, imagine how yeah. that changed the whole dynamic, man.
I know, but it might be like Yanni needs a whole extra day before a trip to do it.
Oh, multiple.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of time.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's a lot of work to make meals, you know?
What if you just make a double batch of things when you're...
We do that.
Triple, and then just save one for the trip.
Mm-hmm. We do that.
Just... this is from someone who doesn't cook, so I don't know. Just suggesting.
You know, like when someone dies and your neighbors bring over like a thing, it's got, it says like 300 degrees, you know, at 20 minutes, 300 degrees and shit. Just do all that, Yanni.
A meal train. That's yeah. what they call it.
Yeah, you just have a special drawer to put them in the freezer. And yeah. Monday drawer, Tuesday drawer.
That's true.
I always said different that colors. We should start a little Meat Eater spin-off reality show called Wives of Meat Eater.
Yeah.
Okay. What would people witness? What would be like the entertainment there?
Oh man, I don't know. It actually would probably be very boring in reality, but
I like it. Katie, what can Steve improve on for these trips?
I think the extending that wonderful 5-hour appreciation period to just when he's home could be nice, and instead of, but I think the thing that he does well, which is also a tip that I think has changed our, at least in the planning, which has been so hard to know, like, okay, he always puts things on the calendar at the, he like over promises, under promises, over delivers. He will say, I'm going to be gone for 10 days. And then sometimes he'll come back in 8. And then it's always like, oh, that's great and unexpected.
Not when you have a nest.
You need time to clean it, Katie.
That's true.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
No surprises. Yeah.
I love that you guys are opposite.
But that has been, that's actually been a big game changer for us. Because when it was 8 days and he didn't get it done and needed to stay 2 extra, those 2 extra were like the straw that broke the camel's back. So always, you know, fudge it a little and then come back early, even if it was never planned.
You do that a lot.
What?
You come home early, usually. You'll promise more. You'll say you're going to be gone longer than you are.
Yeah, that's just being smart, though. Like, buying yourself
that's a nice little
time.
Hot tip.
It took 10 years, 15. So.
And I blame Shelby for when I do that. If I come home after 3 days and I'm supposed to be gone 5, I tell her she made the home too comfortable. That makes me not want to leave it.
Oh, so
it's your fault. It's her fault.
That's cute.
Do the rest of you spouses get to participate in like Halloween costume parties and carving pumpkins and Christmas shopping during the fall? Or is that also just like,
dude, off this table? Year I grew the damn pumpkins.
Are they coming along?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like state fair winners, but.
But you did it so you didn't have to go to the pumpkin patch with me.
That's a hot tip.
Nah, because she likes to go to those places where you go like, you know, get your, like, whatever.
Pumpkin
the corn maze.
Yeah, I'm going to make
those
her a little,
are, those
I'm going to make this, I'm growing her pumpkins. I'm going to make a little scavenger's hunt for her in the yard. Her friend was saying I should do like a little face painting booth and face painter and have like my own little Halloween thing. And
it
then I don't
just
need to
be
go.
Camo
I'm
going
to have like
paint.
Cider and shit. And then I can just get all that taken care of at my house. And I don't need to go to some fake pumpkin patch.
You are all invited and we can do it when Spencer is around.
Yes.
Can we have that schedule?
I don't really honestly see any real areas for improvement. I have massive areas for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I have like little gripes and stuff, but there's no like sort of fundamental thing that ought to be different. You know?
I would disagree. Our most recent argument where you just were like, you're being a bitch. Like, stop being a bitch. And I was like, you're right. I'm being a bitch. So just in the general sense of, yeah.
That would not work. You appreciate being called out sometimes.
No, it was about like
Jennifer
figuring
does
out
too.
Like our fish shack. It's just like a lot of complicated accounting at the end of the summer because we have.
But it takes
owners.
A lot of balls though. I've never actually used.
Yeah,
the
you
B
gotta
word.
Pick your moment for that.
Well, no, because here's the. I want to wrap it up.
It was only after I called him.
People
word.
Are gonna be trying. That.
She called me every name in the book and was like insulting. I'm like the dumbest guy on the planet because I can't figure out certain math things, right? And I like gave her a little taste of her own medicine, to which she said, "You're right." Eventually.
Took some convincing.
That's kind of an awkward way to end it, Spencer. Sorry about that.
It's good. Just choose your moment to call your spouse a bitch. And maybe it'll work.
Don't do that.
Carrie, if you miss an
A.
Why
the word she called me, I was like, later, she's like, "I said you're being A." And I said, "That you know, you left off. You left off the being A.
You the said temporary
you
nature.
Are." She said, "You are A." And I was like, "But I was saying, like, if you said you're being A, that's totally fine. But don't say I am A, because that feels like really, like, that cuts."
We all have areas for improvement, obviously, yeah. Steve and I, in particular.
Oh, I love that.
There you have it. 40% of all marriages.
But not yours.
Not mine, man. I'm in it too deep now. Yeah. I honestly think that there's a lot of things that come out of, I think if you travel a lot and do stuff, I feel like there's probably plenty of people who can't manage their marriage and they never go anywhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's like trouble's going to find you and it's going to find whatever thing you have going on.
Yeah, if you allow hunting to cause a bunch of big problems, you're probably in trouble already. Yeah. You're probably in trouble already.
But I think I've shared this perspective from, and Katie totally disagrees. Me and my friend Tony one time were, had taken all of our kids clam digging. How many kids do they have? Four or three? He's got a bunch of them. We took clam digging. This is the funny thing. On the same trip, he had his kids in one of those backpack deals, but forgot to buckle it in. So, a little kid. And he bent over to dig a clam that kid's right out of the...
Better that way.
Right into the water. But anyways, you're like, you know, I was saying earlier, I always feel good if I'm out with all my kids because I feel like I'm not doing anything bad, right? It's like I'm being a good dad. We're outside. Like, you feel great. And then... we were gone super late and I remember got pulled over by a policeman and we both got kind of yelled at over the phone. Like his wife called and kind of yelled at him. My wife called, kind of yelled at
your me. Kids were little back then too. Yep. Yeah.
And, Tony said to me, Katie hates this quote. Tony said to me, "Man, if we were the way they wanted us to be, they wouldn't like us." Which
I think we'd like them a lot more actually.
But it brings up, I don't know, I think it brings up interesting stuff. Marriage is fun though, man. I wouldn't want to go through life not being married. Not to hack on people that aren't married. I mean, it's great, but I'm just saying for me personally, I think it'd be miserable. I would be miserable not being married. So have a good hunting season. Try to stay married. Use all these tips. Use Yanni's tip where you bake all these special dishes and leave instructions on them. Use Brody's trick where you come home and put everything neat and organized outside where no one has to deal with it.
Yep.
You know, Spencer's trick where he comes and just lays in the nest. Talks about how great the nest is.
I don't embrace it.
He despises the nests.
And everyone will be fine. All right. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And... oh, you know what? I forgot to give the best marriage advice ever. Cormac McCarthy doesn't actually say this, but Phil's rolling his eyes.
It wouldn't be an episode of the Meat Eater podcast without a Cormac McCarthy quote, even one brought to you by T-Mobile.
It's not a Cormac McCarthy quote. It's a way that things work in Cormac McCarthy's books. The worst thing you can do if you're like the worst thing you can do as a character in a Cormac McCarthy novel is act as though you didn't make a decision that you made. Once you make a decision and go down a path, there is no room to later sort of act like you hadn't made that decision. Like you cannot live a false reality because you'll die violently in his books. In real life, you'll suffer mightily.
Yes.
That's all.
Wait, what's the advice in that?
Own it.
Own it. If you make a commitment, you made a commitment.
lot of good reasons for people to get divorced if they choose to do that. But yeah, own it if you can. Sure.
We somehow made a more awkward ending after talking about how you should just, like, call your spouse a bitch.
No, be in a. Be in a. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Telling you what, Dekt is a game changer. Dekt has completely changed how I load, organize my truck. All my stuff that I want is always in there, out of my way, and secure. It's perfect. If you own a pickup truck that you use, you know, like a truck, the Dekt drawer system gives you weatherproof storage for all your gear. You can lock it up, too. You keep your tools and gear organized. Job site or out in the field. Go to Dekt.com/meat eater to receive free shipping. Go to Dekt.com/meat eater and get yourself some free shipping.